I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni. Super excited to have you here. I've got Scott McGrew, who is a television anchorman, and he's not your anchorman like the movie. He's actually responsible and says the appropriate things when on stage, and he's not Will Ferrell, which is probably a good thing. He's been on the television for the last 20 years. He also MCs large events like the Entrepreneurial Awards in his area, as well as runs his own podcast and TV show where he interviews startups in the local area. So we're going to be able to dive into a lot of different things because they all take different skill sets when it comes to public speaking. So I think there'll be a lot of value no matter where you are, because I know for many people I talk to, and myself included, there's this kind of new medium. I've always been a confident speaker, but then now we've got the camera, which is more and more prevalent in the world to getting our message out there. So without anything else to be said, Scott, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Victor. It's funny that you bring up Anchorman, because I have, you know, teenage sons who their friends don't watch television news, and so they don't really know what I do. But the minute my kids say, you know, you've seen Anchorman, right? And the kids say, oh, yeah, of course. That's what my dad does.
Look, he put you on the map.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Well, among the young people who no longer watch television news.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's on that point, you've been on TV the last 20 years.
Yeah, 20 or 30. I've been with the NBC out of San Francisco for about the last 20.
And so with that, obviously lots of stuff's changed and lots of stuff has stayed the same, and I think that's very, very similar with public speaking. As you know, like I said, videos become a medium that you know more people have access to. They don't need to have, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of equipment to be able to put themselves online and get themselves out there. What are some of the things that maybe people wouldn't know happen when it comes to being an anchorman, and you know, some of the key skill sets that you've seen that have held you well over time?
Well, obviously, one of them is just pure experience. You know, you tell young reporters and young TV anchors, just be yourself. But I think you have to get into maybe your 40s and 50s, many of us, until we're confident enough to just be ourselves. So as you start as a young person in television news, you have kind of that furrowed brow and the frowny face where you're trying to look old and serious and intense. And then you look back at old tapes of yourself and realize how silly you looked. The most important thing is to just let your own personality come out. Now, obviously, in television news, we have teleprompters. We have scripts. To some degree, we even have script writers who do much of the writing for us, and we read or present it. But you need to be able to get in there and edit it and put it into your own words and your own style of speaking so that you really can, Victor, be yourself.
We've got a TV anchor over here who is like a sporting great. He's probably in his 50s now. His name's Wally Lewis, but he is horrible.
But he's like, well known, yes.
Yeah, it's pretty much like for rugby league, which is like a big sport in Australia, he's, I don't know, probably the equivalent of, like a Michael Jordan that you decide to put on TV for the sake of him being famous.
Well, you'll be very pleased to know my son Ian plays rugby, and the San Francisco Rugby Club has a bar in it, so that parents can have a beer and go watch their kids play rugby.
Yeah, nice. With this guy, what's horrible about him is his lack of vocal change, or it doesn't match. Hello, everybody, and welcome to blah blah blah. And yeah,
he's clearly reading. Yes, yeah, the best of us can very much be reading a script or a teleprompter, and you don't realize we're reading.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to know from you, because I know some people, when they're doing, say, sales videos or they're creating a product launch or something for their business, they're wanting something that's very slick and doesn't have any filler. It's very consistent, it's very concise and engaging. How do you improve, apart from 30 years of doing it, with keeping your voice as natural as possible and being able to have kind of that natural flow that we see a lot of you anchors out there have?
You really need to know the material that you're reading and read it with the emotion that in which it was intended. I also do biblical readings in church each Sunday. And as I read it and people come up to me and say, oh, I really enjoyed that, I really understood the passage, you have to understand, whether it's a newscast or a Bible passage that you're reading, what was the point of this, newscast story? What was the point of this Bible story? And then you'll begin to realize where you should be able to pause, where you should hit certain words harder, where you should change the inflection of your voice. So if you are doing a sales presentation on something that you're very intimately familiar with, you should be able to deliver that information in a way that sounds passionate, that sounds like you understand what it is. I can tell you, you can tell when somebody on the news is simply reading a script for the first time without understanding where it's going, what direction it's going in, because they do sort of your Wally, the news presenter's, sort of flat tone, because they don't know what it's about. So really knowing your material, and that doesn't mean memorizing it necessarily, but really knowing what your material is and the tone is going to give you that authentic sound.
Yeah, because you do notice that, like, this just in type news is like...
Absolutely. Well, we say that's, sometimes reading yourself into a corner, because once you take the intonation one way and then you realize, oh, and the person died at the end, you think, oh my gosh, I started this off terribly. Yeah,
I sounded really enthusiastic about that.
That has happened, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are really valid points, or like not valid points, but very, really actionable points for people to know. Is I've seen people on teleprompters, shooting videos and things like that. And I mean, I'm all for being an extemporaneous speaker, that you can just speak off the cuff and know what you're talking about and you don't need the teleprompter. Different, but there's different circumstances. Say, you're not going to do that in a news broadcast every single day, because then it'll go for 2 hours instead of 1 hour, and sure. You'll have some conversation.
Well, and I've seen people use teleprompters you were mentioning an award ceremony or something like that. Maybe I would use the teleprompter myself, even if it's not on television, but there's a large crowd and it's offered to me. But teleprompter is a skill that you learn over time. To not look, we call it teleprompter stare, where it looks like you're not just staring at the thing, you're not reading. I would say shy away from teleprompter as a crutch, unless, there's just so much material that there's no way that you could understand it all. And again, don't ever try to memorize anything. That's a terrible road to go down. But understand what it is that you're talking about. And unless you're really good at it right off the bat, teleprompter is not necessarily a great answer.
Yeah. And I mean, the only time I've seen it used is if people have got, say, a sales video where there might be some post editing, but also they've got specific psychological points that they're trying to hit.
Absolutely.
Throughout it. And Absolutely. Then it's like, if you do miss that, that can be vital. Whereas generally in most presentations we give, you forget one little thing and no one else knows that. But if it's the difference. But I think those are really into the interesting side of things, when it comes to say your Press Hair TV, which is you're interviewing local startups, is that right?
That's right. It's PressHereTV.com if your viewers and listeners would like to watch it on the internet. Local for me is Silicon Valley. So yep. The companies that are local to me are Google, Facebook, Apple. Apple is just down the street from my house.
Never heard of them.
Yes, exactly. right. Netflix. I enjoy Netflix is just over on the highway a couple of blocks away. And when we have visitors come and I'm taking them home, you know, from the airport, we'll pass this rather nondescript office building and I'll point at it and I'll say, and that's Netflix. And you can see them double take like, oh, really? Yeah, no, it really is. Sometimes we'll stop and in front of the sign and take a picture. So, yes, so I interview CEOs and startups and venture capital, the money behind technology here in San Francisco every Sunday morning. And as you point out, it's available on the internet for anybody to watch.
And so with that, we've obviously, having been on both sides of the microphone with podcasts and things like that, you have to have a degree of knowledge in that particular skill set to be able to take conversations in particular directions. You don't have to necessarily be an expert, but you know, if you're been a sports anchor your whole life and then you try and move into interviewing Silicon Valley startups, you're not going to be able to hit on the key questions. Are there preparation systems that you go through when you're looking into these companies, or have you got someone who does that? And what does that tend to look like to be able to ask, when I say the right questions, I guess good questions that are going to get you ideally sure. better answers?
Well, you're absolutely right. You need to, if you're podcasting or thinking about writing or doing some sort of presentation, do the thing that you're passionate about because you'll know so much more about that than everyone else. That said, I think good questioning is a skill that can be learned. Yes, I do all of my own preparation. Part of that, Victor, starts with choosing the guest, him or herself. I get pitched lots of guests by public relations companies that are hired to get, you know, their CEOs or their clients on television, hundreds and hundreds of them. And I only pick very few that will actually be on the television show. Some of them I go out and find myself because I'm curious about what they do, but a great deal of them come to me as to want to be on the show. And if I can't think of what that very first question is going to be, if I can't wait to ask what that, you know, that very first question, then I tend not to have them on the show at all. The guests that I choose are people that I think are going to be super interesting, that if I had found them at a cocktail party, I would corner them and say, you need to tell me everything there is to know about whatever it happens to be. That said, it's okay to ask questions that to the person answering them are incredibly obvious because your viewership or your listenership doesn't necessarily know the answer. You might not know the answer. That's why you're questioning the guy, right? So it's okay to ask an astronaut, what does it feel like when the rocket blasts off? It's kind of a simple, childish question, but everybody wants to know the answer, don't they?
Yeah. It's really interesting because, yeah, what I found, my previous podcast, I interviewed young entrepreneurs and it was kind of as I was partly on a journey myself. And then it got to a point that at the start, I was my target audience. I was wanting to know a lot of these things. And as I uncovered more and more things and then learned stuff outside of the podcast, I had to remember to keep my questions to my target audience.
Yes.
So a lot of the time I would be asking them at the start of my podcast, the first few episodes, questions that were very self-serving because I knew that they would reach my target audience, but that also helped me. I'd just ask questions that I generally wanted to know. Whereas
that you generally wanted to know. And I will give you an example, because if you heard of Theranos, it's the blood testing startup that caused quite a scandal here in America, with a young woman who had dropped out of Stanford at the age of 19 to create this multi-billion dollar company that tested blood in a certain way. And it turned out to be a complete scam. Books have been written about it. There's a movie special about it, a podcast called The Dropout that I recommend to your listeners. Mm. If somebody had simply asked her the question, Elizabeth, how is it that you are 19 years old at the time you drop out of Stanford, that you have created an invention that has completely changed everything that everyone's ever tried to do with blood testing? How would you possibly accomplish that? And can I see this machine working? Well, that would have ended it right there, because she didn't have a working machine. And it was a reasonable question to ask. And I don't think anybody ever asked it. Yeah. So even the obvious questions are okay to ask.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because, yeah, it's that progressive, yeah, taking them through the journey, particularly in that startup space that you are in. You are talking about, people want to know that initial journey that they've been through to create something. Yeah, a startup isn't, you know, a hairdresser or a bakery or a restaurant. It's something that's ideally changing a particular industry, or, you know, revolutionizing how something's done. So people actually are interested in the journey, not how did you start up your restaurant. Well, I always liked cooking and I thought I'd create that, which is, you know, not quite the same. So very, very interesting points. What have you found? You get often a guest, and I'm sure you probably got it if you've got a developer or something who's the person that you've got on, and, you know, this kind of painting around with the same brush, but someone who's not necessarily outgoing and doesn't give, they haven't been PR trained very well, and they don't give those nice long answers where they can do more of the talking then and you can do less of it. How have you found any strategies to be able to kind of get more out of people in that sense?
I'll answer that in two parts, Victor. One is, the overall strategy is, you have more than one guest.
Okay.
We have a half an hour television show, and we have more than one guest for that very reason. If the first guest doesn't turn out to be very interesting, or is not very verbal and doesn't have a lot to say, we'll move on to the next guest. And that's the safety that's built into having more than one guest. Now, that said, how do you get more out of the person? I do suggest that you ask emotional-based questions. Factual questions are not particularly interesting, and they're something that can be handled in the beginning of the television show. My first guest graduated from such and such university and is this old and lives in this particular spot, etc. All the basic stuff. Asking the questions, you know, how old were you when you started your company? Oh, I was 27, is not a particularly interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. Rather, you know, you were 27 when you started your company. Did you ever imagine it could grow as big as it has? That sort of thing. Where you're asking emotional questions, even with your restaurant example. People might find a restaurant startup interesting. You know, I've always wanted to open my own restaurant, but I've always wondered what kind of food I would make. What do you think is the best sort of food that people should be eating, and why did you choose yours? Those sorts of things, because you're going to get that emotional answer of, my mother always used to make whatever, and you're going to get a story out of it, as opposed to, well, how many guests does your restaurant seat? Well, 47.
Yeah, it's that's really interesting, and something I think I need to improve on myself. I think probably everyone can consistently improve. Absolutely. On their questions, but yeah, you hear the saying, if you want better answers, ask better questions. And I mean, a lot of it really does fall on the person on one side of the mic to give a platform for that other person, particularly how nervous they often are if they're on, you know, particularly with you, say,
And because people are nervous about, you know, will I remember all the facts and all the figures and all of the right answers? Well, there's no wrong answer to, you know, the day before you walked into that venture capitalist's office and asked for $10 million in funding, were you nervous? You know, because they know whether or not they were nervous. Tell me about that day. And then they're falling back on their own memory about something that happened, as opposed to trying to get facts and figures out, which are the things that make people nervous when they talk on radio or television. I always reassure people, I'm not running a quiz show here.
Yeah.
I promise you will know the answer to every question I ask because you are you.
Yeah. And I think that's the big thing is you're like, I'm not here to make you look bad.
Absolutely. That's another thing. Now, that's not to say I'm not going to ask you a tough question, but I am not here to make you look bad.
Yeah. And finally, with your MC work and hosting in real life, I guess you could say, I know your other stuff is in real life, but you've got that screen as a barrier. What do you find has made it that places come to you apart from the social proof of being on television, that people and events and places have come to you saying, "Hey Scott, we'd love you to MC our event." And then how do you, or what steps do you take to create a good event from an MC?
I'll give you a couple answers on that. The first answer I always, or the first question I always ask is, when you say MC, describe to me the job. Am I here to read a script that you're giving me? Am I coming up with my own script? When you say that you would like this event to be over at 9:30 p.m., is that my responsibility? If somebody's talking too long, you know, a guest speaker or something, am I the person who's keeping us on time? Or am I just here as the host and saying the things that you want me to say? That's my first question, is who's in charge here, me or some stage manager? Either answer's fine, but let's make sure we got that ahead of time. Mm. The other one is to be as genuine as you can with the audience. I have a couple of tips there. I always use what I call a softened startup. When I come up to the microphone, I will usually give some sort of anecdote, you know, as ladies and gentlemen, as I was walking up here, I was talking to Joe in backstage. He's the stage manager. And he said something in which you're not saying, and now the beginning of the show, something that puts people at ease, just something that feels genuine to them where they don't realize, oh, I guess we've started now, haven't we? Something that gets you on their side. The other tip I would give you that I have seen too many speakers do is don't be self-deprecating. Don't say, gosh, I'm really nervous to be up here, or I'm not going to keep you for very long, or otherwise sort of apologize. Never apologize to your audience. They paid money to see you, or they at least, you know, took time out of their busy schedules to come see this award ceremony or whatever it happens to be. Get up there and be confident and never, ever be self-deprecating.
Yeah, I love that. I love all those tips, but I really love that final one, is the self-deprecating. It's the only people.
I think it's human nature, isn't it? Yeah. To sort of say, you know, geez, excuse me, or I'm not going to take up much of your time, or let's get right to it. You know, it takes the enthusiasm out of the room. You are the person at the podium. You need to, even if you don't feel like it in your heart of hearts, it's okay to fake it. But be the person who says, I'm in charge. This is going to be great. Let's get to it, everyone.
Yeah, and I think it's the same kind of psychology that people go through when they have to ask for a sale of something. It's like the ones that are horrible, like, well, yeah, and... yeah, we've talked about all this stuff, and yeah, if you're interested, you can buy. But if not, that's all good.
Because that's okay too, right?
Yeah, and it's just like it gives people this out of, if I suck, if the person doesn't buy, or if I suck
on stage,
it's all right because I said I won't be up here for long, or that I'm really nervous, or whatever. I never ever want a compliment when I come off stage going, "Oh, you were great. You didn't look nervous at all." Like, you were great. Yeah, I don't want to have to.
Yes, isn't that true?
Yeah, I don't want this to be up on stage going, "Hey, I'm really nervous, guys," and so let's get this, and then people go, "Oh no, you didn't seem that nervous up there. You were fine." I want the, you're a great host, or you're funny, or you're really impactful, whatever it may be when you get on stage. But I think the other thing is, knowing your role, staying in your lane, but having it nicely clear cut prior to doing it. Are you in control of getting people on and off stage in the
precisely right
time is important, because that's going to change your stress levels beforehand if you don't know if that's your role. And yes. Oh my God, this person's gone for 45 minutes. I meant to go for 30.
And if you're presenting at a sales conference, or you're presenting at a local community thing, oftentimes the person who organized the event is not that experienced at how this is all going to work. And so if somebody says, we're going to have an event from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. and I have 6 speakers, you think, oh no, this thing's going to last forever. Who's it? Everybody's going to talk for way longer than they should. Who's in charge of shutting it down and moving on? Is that me as an MC, which is what that means after all, or am I just a host and one of the speakers?
That's very, very good points. And I think there's a lot that we've dived into for different spaces. I mean, some people are going to get some value, who may have aspirations to be on television or do some more things to get comfortable behind the camera, which I think is a super important point. And then we've got the MC side of things, and as well as how to ask better questions, which I think out of everything is super important, whether you're creating content or you're just trying to have a better life and ask better questions, is something that we can all hunt away for. So I thank you a lot for that, Scott. We know that people can go and check out your interview-based show at presshairtv.com. If people want to get in contact with you or even find out about your podcast, where can they go and what can they do?
I'm delighted you asked. You can email me directly. It's scott.mcgrew@nbc.com. And McGrew is McGrew. My podcast is called Sand Hill Road. And you've been podcasting a long time, and I really enjoy listening to your podcast, but I'm brand new at it. So I would really appreciate your listeners tuning in and searching Sand Hill Road. And as we go, I'll just explain that Sand Hill Road is the name of the avenue in which all the venture capital firms in Silicon Valley sit. It's a bit like Wall Street or Hollywood. It's just one of those words that in Northern California, in Silicon Valley, when you say Sand Hill Road, it means technology startups.
Nice. Well, when everyone jumps over there, you may as well give us both a rating and a review and let us know what you think of our shows. And we'll link every way to get in touch with Scott and listen to his show at publicspeakingblueprint.com. Look, Scott, thank you so much and welcome to our Speaker Nation family. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I've really enjoyed diving into your whirlpool of knowledge and being able to share it with everybody else.
A pleasure for me as well, Victor.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.